A substantial number of urban Indians would like reservations continued because many of them plan to go back to reservations after they lived all their life in the cities.
Why is a continuation of reservations a good thing for urban Indians, for reservation Indians, and for mainstream America?
I think Indian people are the only people in the United States who have roots here. And urban Indians, in a great many cases, look at the reservation as their homeland, in the same way that German and other ethnic minorities in the United States look back to Germany in a real sense of homeland. In terms of reservation Indians, this is where many of the traditional people live. This is our land. It's there's no question about that in federal statutes. There should be no discussion by anybody else except Indians of what happens to Indian land.
Mr. Story, you make such a strong plea for continuation, I think it's time to hear from Mr. Miller.
Mr. Delory, in 1887, there were 135 million acres in the reservation system and administered by the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Since that period, under the protection of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, the total amount of Indian acreage has shrunk to 55 million, slightly over 30%. Why?
Because the pressure, once the allotment system was put in, was to get rid of Indian land as quickly as possible.
And didn't the Bureau of Indian Affairs concur in that?
The Bureau of Indian Affairs was pressured by a great many pressure groups in American society. Those tribes who held their land in common and refused to allot are now much better off than other tribes.
The BIA is constantly pressured, isn't it? For example, of the 55 million acres now held by Indians, 11 million, or over 20%, are held individually and by tribes, approved by the BIA. Is that consistent with maintaining Indian culture?
In most of the tribes that have allotments, the tribe has a land consolidation program. The tribe is trying to buy up the land and put it back in original tribal status as quickly as possible.
Well, now, Mr. Gloria, I take it as long as the trusteeship system continues, as it has from 1887 to today, and the shrinkage in acreage, then Congress and the BIA may act to work or transfer on that land because they hold it as trustees. If the land were transferred to the Indians, if each tribe held it collectively in fee, then the Indians would have the same right, more right, to protection of that land than they now have, wouldn't they?
No, they wouldn't, because the average income off Indian land is less than the state taxes paid on it. I refer you, and Senator, or Representative Steiger, you know this, the Burns Paiute in western Oregon has 780 acres of land. Annual income off that land is $1,700, and the state taxes is $1,900.
And that's exactly why we propose taking the BIA budget, and instead of spending it on the Bureau of Indian Affairs, distributing it to the tribes in proportion to the amount of land they own. Now let's look at the BIA. BIA has responsibility for Indian education, yet 60% of the Indians in schools in this country are educated in state schools. Is that consistent with the preservation of Indian culture?
No, it certainly isn't. You should put all those people who are in the state school back.
And why hasn't the BIA done that?
Because there are a great many factors, one of which is the states want to get control of money that is supposed to go to Indian education so they can build gymnasiums for white kids off the reservation.
Well, now, let's look at those schools. The performance...
We have a question from the Congress.
No, I didn't even know that Mr. Deloria was running for office.
That's something you've been more sensitive to than I
have. Let's look at a school that the state runs.
Well, let me pick one. Let me pick the North Cheyenne School in the Cheyenne Reservation in Montana, where in an 18-month period, 12 out of 200 students, teenagers, attempted to commit suicide.
Right.
Is that a lesson of BIA success?
No, I think there are a great many factors involved with it. I think one of the factors is there's constant termination threat on the reservations. So there's a great demoralizing factor throughout
society. But the BIA has been BIA with the reservation system has been the agent of that policy. Isn't it the BIA that began and administered the notorious relocation program to take Indians off the reservation and into the city?
The BIA couldn't pick up anything by itself. These policies are made by the national administration.
Happy to end my cross-examination on the note that BIA can't pick up anything by itself. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Delory. Well, Mr. Greenberg, we're going to be back to you for rebuttal. Mr. Miller, the case seems to be that without the Bureau of Indian Affairs, without a special relationship, Indian culture will die. What's your answer?
Indian culture has not had too great a lifespan with it. The mortality rate on Indian reservations gives a 20-year lesser lifespan to Indians than to other Americans. The infant mortality rate is twice the national average. The suicide rate on some of the BIA schools is 100 times the national average for teenagers. The diabetes rate, the alcoholism rate, all substantially in excess of the national average. The net effect of BIA administration of the reservations is a failure to protect life. Mr. Deloria wants the preservation of Indian culture, and so do we. But you can have no culture without life. And it is the basic protection of life that the current system has failed. The Indians are not first in the things that count, first only in mortality rates and unemployment. What has happened is that the BIA has assumed and taught dependency. Only we can protect you. And by assuming and teaching dependency, has created dependency. The BIA has assumed and taught weakness, and by assuming and teaching weakness, has created weakness. But there is a new Indian spirit in the land. There is a spirit that talks in other tones. That spirit is exemplified by Indians who went to Alcatraz, and we went to Alcatraz, to talk to those Indians about new spirits in the land, about the new spirit of Indians in the land, and about the reservation system.
When I'm out here, I feel like a dog with a tail curled up over its back. The minute I get back onto the reservation, the tail curls the other way. It goes between my legs. That's the way I feel when I get back on the reservation. That's the way you're treated. That's the way you're made to feel.
This whole thing was set up to be an Indian cultural center at the university here for Indian studies. Not to sit out here and make baskets all day, which is good, and open up shop, say, 2 o'clock every afternoon for all the white people who want to come over.
When I left the reservation, I came into the city to learn what the government has been doing to the Indian people on reservations and the neglect that they do have for reservations.
The reservations, certain ones, they'll have a big write-up that they've got $300,000 for just an Indian reservation or 48s. Actually, what it does is for the BIA employees to get new chairs, new beds, new automobiles, new gasoline. Mm-hmm. That money never gets to us. But
too many times before, the government has said, and right now even, they're saying, well, we'll take care of your affairs because really I don't think you're competent enough to take care of yourself. So what we're doing right here is showing the people that we are competent enough to take care of our own things.
I mean, even here in California, I've gone to reservations with, you and the doghouse this way, you know. I mean, they protect their dogs better than they do some of the Indian people.
Well, why don't people speak up?
They're so used to living this way, they don't know how to speak up. Indian people are afraid. I mean, they feel their way through something before they speak out against it.
They're proud people.
They're proud, and they want to stay this way. When a man can stand up and say, I'm an Indian, and be proud of it, that'll be the happiest day of my life, because I'd love to see it.
Since the day that it became Indian country, or Indian land, whatever you would call it, I've had a good feeling. I felt like I'm free.
Representative Steiger, we propose that the Indian lands that are today rightfully the Indians and theirs be transferred to them, owned by them, owned by the tribes together, subject only to the restrictions they place on it. We propose the Bureau of Indian Affairs be abolished, that its annual budget, now $250 million, be distributed in cash grants to each tribe in proportion to the amount of land it owns, and that both those things occur after a 10-year phasing period. We propose that to give the Indians the real option. Mr. Greenberg would only give them the option of living on the reservation controlled by the BIA, or as he puts it, leaving the reservation and competing in larger society. Our option is ownership of their own land, control of their own assets, their own planning, and their own destiny. The myth is that given that option, the Indian tribes cannot make it. We think they can. We have asked to join us tonight Mr. Richard Dodge, a Menominee Indian, who lives in Menominee County, was a member of the Menominee tribe, and since that tribe has been ended, Mr. Dodge was chairman of the Menominee County Board of Supervisors.
Mr. Dodge, we're glad to have you here with us.
Mr. Dodge, would you say that your administration of the Menominee Territory, since what we call termination, is more or less successful than would have occurred if the BIA had still been administering the territory during that period?
I think we've probably gone further than in 9 years than we had over 100 years under the BIA.
What sort of things have happened in education, for example?
May I just interrupt a second? I'd like to tell Mr. Orfield and everybody listening that the Menominees are not dead. If we are dead, we're the swingest bunch of Indians you've ever seen.
Josh, let me amend that to say they're not only alive and well, but they're alive and well in Wisconsin, which we haven't said yet, okay?
You better believe it.
Mr. Orfield wrote a book saying that the Menominee termination was a disaster, but like Mark Twain, the notices of its death were greatly exaggerated. Mr. Dodge, what sort of things have happened in education?
All right, let's take education. I think back in my days, not too many years ago, that if we had one person in high school, this was a big thing. Between 1955 and 1965, we had 10 young people seek education at the high school level. Last year, we had 26 people in colleges. Our whole effort down in the grade school level is to create a new self-image of the Indian, the youngster. No longer is he thinking in terms of the substandard that the finger is being pointed, you're an Indian, you're something below the white man. The whole educational system, and we are forcing this issue at the local level, we are exerting pressure on the school district of which we are a part of to review their study, their books. Hopefully we have our whole new...
Technical difficulties with the audio portion of this program. Please bear with us. Thank you.
I myself and many other leaders felt that we could not make it. We had been told so long that we couldn't make it. It had been driven into us that of this dependency attitude that you had to have a white man run your business, that you weren't capable. And let me just say that last week, for the first time in our history, one of our own Menominee members, tribal members, is now heading up our corporation. We have thrown off the yoke of dependency.
That seems like a good note to go to cross-examination on it. Mr. Greenberg.
Mr. Dodge, are you in favor of termination for all Indian tribes at the present time, or just that Menominee worked out well?
Mr. Greenberg, I'm here to state the case of the Menominees. Number one, that they are not dead. Number two is that despite the way termination was handled for the Menominees, which I think was atrocious, we are going to survive.
Yes, but are you in favor of termination for all other Indian tribes?
I am not in favor of anything other than our sole effort to make the Menominee Indians survive.
Would the gentleman yield that point, Mr. Greenberg? Would you?
Yes.
Mr. Dodge, I'm very interested in your approach that and I think it's very valid concerning that you had been taught literally that without the support of the BIA or without the support of the federal government, you would be unable to prosper and succeed. Who did most of that preaching? Was it your parents? Was it the BIA people themselves? Was it the local newspaper? Who would you say was most responsible?
I think it was probably part of the educational system. It was part of the environmental situation where the superintendent from Washington, the BIA, had a nice great big white house and he had a lot of nice white children and you just didn't ever associate with them. You sort of nodded as you went by on your school. This is the type of thing. This whole idea of a tribal council making some decisions and having to send some forms to Washington to get approval, having them sent back saying you signed the wrong forms. This whole menagerie.
Well, I still think, Mr. Greenberg, I still think your question is standing for the witness. Mr. Miller is presenting you, Mr. Dodge, for an argument that there should be a basic change in the system, a change like the Menominees have had. Mr. Greenberg asks you if you want that for all Indians.
Sir, I'm here to state the case of the Menominees. That's all.
Let me...
I was asked to participate in this show because the Menominees were terminated and supposedly we're dead, and